Return of the Swamp Thing. Kind of excited.
I've never seen it. Is it good?
I have no idea, but I like the title.
For real, are you being facetious?
I'm serious. I really like the title. Where did the Swamp King? Where did he go? What's he doing now? Why is he returning now? Where's he been? Is it going to be like? Is he going to get welcomed back?
Is this a stand-up bit you've heard somewhere before, or are you just writing it as we go?
I'm just kind of riffing it.
Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
I get people off! I look for the one guy who isn't getting off, and I make him get off.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
Obviously, Josh is no longer with us. We do have a bonus Patreon episode he recorded. So if you want to hear that, head over to Patreon, or ihatecritics.net/Patreon to become a supporter. If you, in the past, have listened to our bonus Patreon episodes, I think the feeds have been jacked up, because some of the podcasts I subscribe to, I had to reset my feeds. So if you need help doing that, reach out to me and I'll help you get the feed squared away. And if you're on Patreon, if you're on PayPal instead of Patreon, I can get you a link as well if you don't have it already. But it will be the last full-time Josh episode we go through every year from 1970, whatever Sean was born, to through this year, and talk about our favorite movies. So it's kind of a fun, long episode. So
76, Whippersnapper.
I was going to say 77. That's right, because the Rocky Texas era. But yeah, so that is going to be out there this week, but I didn't want to wait till this episode to mention that. We will be making changes slowly to the show. We're going to start with Flickchart this week. With Josh not here...
We did find a replacement.
Yes. We're going to bring on a special guest every Flickchart. Would you like to tell us who the special guest is?
It's George Washington.
Yeah, we're going to flip a coin.
I mean, it was found in a movie theater, so I mean, technically it's seen a few movies.
Yeah. And... should we just do the one on the left is always heads, the one on the right is always tails?
Yeah,
kind of thing?
That'll work.
And then, I mean, if we have a passionate debate, maybe we'll throw a poll out there for you guys to vote on, too. You can do all those at Critics Pod. That's Twitter and Instagram. We're also on Facebook. We have the Facebook group as well. Sean's been posting a lot of reviews up there lately, and he's starting a bunch of new projects as well. Like, what else are you working on?
I'm working on a book. About movies of the 2000s, going back and pulling all together the old reviews that I can dig up via the Wayback Machine, because some of the old websites I wrote for aren't there anymore. they no longer exist, so I have to kind of finesse my way around that and find the stuff that I've written about over the years and trying to get that all back together. But there are also a bunch of movies that I didn't write about at the time. So, like Supernova, which I wrote about this week, which is a bizarre little Walter Hill gem that he took his name off of. I found out that if you give it 20 years, Freddie Prinze Jr. doesn't suck that bad, which is something. That was fun to learn. Scream 3, after 20 years, does not hold up. So there's that, too.
Wow, you had to go back and watch all those.
I had fun, man. That was fun to do. I had a lot of time this week.
Scream 3 was, I think, my introduction to Jay and Silent Bob. I knew of them, I think. But that was when they started clicking, and then I kind of went backwards and watched everything else they did.
So that was OG. I was back there watching Clerks in 94 and getting nearly thrown out of college for bringing Clerks to a class for people to watch. And
really?
Yeah. Well, they were so mad. Like, this is so dirty. This movie's dirty. Why are we watching this? Like, it's hilarious. It's fucking funny.
I was in junior high when it came out. Yeah. But other things going on with the podcast and in the news. Let's start with the one trailer I posted on Monday, and I tagged Sean on it, so he has no excuse to have not seen it, but he may not have seen it. It's called Murder Mystery.
Murder Mystery. Refresh my memory.
Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler.
Oh, I did miss that one. Yeah, I totally did not. I totally did not watch that.
It looks like a Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler movie.
So it's going to suck. But it's on Netflix, right?
Yes.
Yes! I win.
I'll still watch it, just for the show. Yeah, and I also posted a video that Saturday Night Live did of, like, literally every Adam Sandler character getting together for a reunion.
I've actually literally had that nightmare. I was, like, stuck in an elevator with, like, little Nicky and Billy Madison, and it's just...
You were like Kenan Thompson, like... Okay.
I mean, Sandler was pretty good on the show, on SNL really? This week. Especially the... I mean, he reprised the Farley tribute that he's done before, and that was pretty awesome.
Which I've never watched. I know it's on Netflix, and I kind of feel like I want to.
Was he promoting this Netflix movie? What is that
called? I didn't watch it. I saw the clip on...
I was wondering why he was on there. It was like, seemed like random.
Hasn't been back since he got fired. I know that. So I don't... It was kind of a big deal. I mean, he must be promoting that Netflix movie. Usually when we get that trailer, it's out in a couple of weeks or a month or so.
That's true, yeah.
They do tend to make the Adam Sandler ones kind of an event.
Netflix is so weird. You'd never... I mean, you could... if you're, like, on the app every day, maybe you see that they've got something premiering soon, but outside of that, I never know what their schedule is. Like, I had no idea the Zac Efron movie was out this week.
Yeah, I just...
I thought that movie was going out theatrical. I thought that was going to be in limited release and kind of move out to theaters.
No, Netflix bought it, apparently. And that's, even The Irishman, I was listening to Irwin Winkler on Mark Maron's podcast, and I think they're going to try to release that theatrically before Netflix.
Hmm.
Or maybe along with it. I don't know how that'll work.
Well, interestingly enough, Netflix is buying a theater. Have you heard about this? They're buying their own theater in Los Angeles so they can show their movies a week before they premiere them, and that technically they get around the Academy rules.
That's nice. Because Aaron Winkler claims that The Irishman is better than Goodfellas. He's got the cast, the director, and I'm curious. I'll give you that much. But I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah,
Goodfellas
I've heard that one
before. Pretty, it's one of the best, if not the best. I did go camping this weekend, and some friends around the campfire said, I know you guys talked about that movie 43 on the show. What did you guys say about that movie? Because it's hilarious. And I still have yet to see it, but I remember Sean called that the worst movie of the year. Among his worst of all time.
Because we were, that was like, that was week one or two of the show.
Early on.
And I walked in here, and I walked into the old studio, and...
Mad.
I was, depressed.
Well, that's right.
I was so sad having sat through that movie. It just, it depressed me with how terrible it was. It was insanely depressing to try and sit through a movie where Hugh Jackman has balls on his chin, and everybody thinks that's funny right there. It's hilarious.
When you're drunk around the campfire, that is hilarious. It was even, yeah.
I miss out on so much humor for not being drunk, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they did purposely make that movie pretty much to piss critics off, so fuck them, I guess.
No, they just intentionally, they just didn't know what the hell they were doing, I think.
And then Sean shared with me an article from IndieWire. The top movies so far this, was it decade or this millennium?
Yeah, the last 10 years, I guess 2010 to 2019, and they chose that really terrible Mad Max movie as a as people assume, I think.
Right.
I like Mad Max, guys. I do. I know you keep telling me that I don't. I do. I do like it. It's not not even the top 10 of this decade. It's a good movie. It's not the top 10 movies of this decade. And certainly not the best movie of this decade. I mean, we're talking about a list that doesn't have Gone Girl or Hereditary on it.
Yeah. I mean, I like Mad Max a lot. I feel like I like it more and more as I see it. That said, I agree. I mean, Social Network's better. And I'm cool with the Moonlight Boyhood argument. I personally would take Mad Max over those two, but that's just me.
Mm.
Inside Llewyn Davis I like better. Under the Skin I like better. Get Out's right up there. I don't know. It's a...
Enemy,
not even on this list.
Yeah.
They got a TV show on this list, Twin Peaks, The Return. So I don't... And a lot... I don't know. It's hard to... How do you make a list and have it be real?
Roma's on this list, and I mean... I don't agree with that.
There's a lot of recency bias on this list, yeah. I think. I don't know. But, I mean...
Anywhere is a good group, but they're also, you know, they go for kind of pretentious stuff as well. And there's nothing wrong with, like, movies like Uncle Boomy. It's a fine movie.
And, well, yeah, Tree of Life is number two, if you're going to talk pretentious.
I mean, it's reflective, I guess, of their taste, but not necessarily right. The taste of... mainstream audiences.
And if you're, I mean, I guess with Mad Max as a mainstream movie, I'll take it over the Avenger movies any day of the week. I'll take it over the Star Wars, Mission Impossibles, Fast and Furious. Is that the right plural? But I don't know. Calling it the best. It's kind of like when I get mad about Josh bringing up Black Panther as a real movie, or even you for that matter. It's not, I like it a lot, but. You know, let's not put it in the same conversation as Star is Born or Hereditary.
Yeah.
That's just me. But, yeah, that's our news. Anything else you want to talk about before we get into the show?
Yeah, not really. I mean, trying to decide which streaming service to get, I guess, is kind of becoming more and more of a thing. Because, honestly, I mean, today was the first time I've opened the Netflix app. In weeks, like I rarely ever watch Netflix, and sooner or later, then it's going to be all original content, which is interesting. But I mean, you can't find anything on there anymore when it comes to old movies. Like I watch a lot of the, like I'm, you know, with my book, I haven't yet to watch a movie on Netflix, which is weird. But trying to decide, like, do I want to get HBO because that's got movies that I want, and Cinemax has their own thing, and then now. Of course, Disney comes in right at the perfect price point. They're coming in at $7.99 a month.
Yeah.
And given the amount of content and the amount of stuff that they own, that's going to be hard to pass up. But what do you... I mean, at a certain point, how much can you pay for how many streaming services?
Well, when you had cable, not you necessarily, but everybody else, I don't know your cable situation. But, I mean, people were paying $100, $120 a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's... You know, 7 or 8 Netflixes. So, I mean, it's kind of just going to go back to that. It's basically what's going to happen. Well, you're going to get to pick and choose what you want. So, in a way, I like it. I'm sure I'll be able to figure out something for the podcast. Maybe have a podcast account or something like that. That might be the way to go in the future.
We'll do illegal watch parties on the Facebook page. That way,
yeah. FaceTime or Facebook Live.
I'm waiting for that day, man. The day that's going to happen in a movie theater where somebody's going to get...
What's happening?
It has to have, right? I've not seen it myself. I've not seen anybody streaming anything from our local theaters, but I just keep waiting to see it pop up somewhere on Facebook where somebody's like Facebook Live-ing a movie.
I mean, I've seen Cub Games Facebook Lives.
Oh, yeah.
Not
like somebody who's at the game, or
right. And when I've seen people watching with a TV and doing it too, but again, I'm
shocked it hasn't made news yet. Somebody doing that with like Endgame or something.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like the more attention you draw to it, the more it's going to happen. So sometimes it's like a sex tape. Just kind of let it happen. Don't say anything.
Here's yet another thing I'm shocked to have not seen on Facebook yet. I mean, there was a Facebook murder, which was creepy. Yeah. That did happen. A Facebook Live murder did happen a few years ago.
I'm sure there was some Facebook Live sex thing at some point. Somebody had to have done something. All right. I'll quit wasting everybody's time. And we can move on to the
Josh isn't here, so everybody thinks this is a waste of time now.
I mean, there are going to be changes made, not drastic ones, just kind of, we're going to try to go, I think, more above board in terms of copyrighted material. And we've been kicking around ideas about co-hosts and how to handle that in the future, and I think we have some ideas to start building on in the coming weeks. So just be patient with us as we get there, but let's start with The Intruder.
The Intruder, okay. Dennis Quaid, Megan Good, Michael Ealy, in a movie we've all seen before. This is a movie about a guy who's selling his house to a young up-and-coming couple. He doesn't want to give the house up. He ends up kind of stalking the family and becomes a bloody mess near the end. There's nothing really surprising here. This is Deion Taylor, who did Traffic, which last year was not a very good movie. And Deion Taylor's not a very interesting or inventive director. He basically likes making the same movie over and over again, using the same technique over and over again. The novelty here, I guess, is that Dennis Quaid is the bad guy. And you know, Dennis Quaid is a unique, I guess, kind of bad guy. He's not a guy you see as a bad guy often, and so that makes sense. Michael Ealy needs to get out of this genre. I don't know why he keeps making these movies. He keeps getting stuck in this type of garbage over and over again. I think this is the fourth or fifth of these things he's made in his career. It's bizarre how many times he ends up being the guy who has to, his wife or his girlfriend is being stalked by somebody, or he's stalking a wife or girlfriend, one or the other. Just a waste of a really talented guy in a series of this ridiculous genre. But he and Megan Good, I think maybe they need to start looking at TV shows or something. If this is the kind of garbage they're going to continue to make when they're in the movies, they need to find a nice television vehicle to carry their talents, because they're wasting everybody's time making movies like Intruder, which is just, there's nothing inventive, there's nothing creative, it's not particularly well shot or edited. In fact, it's edited so poorly. So they're set up, obviously, you know where, I'm not giving you any spoilers here. They're trapped in the house. Quaid is stalking them, trying to kill them. They're hiding. And the editing is so poor, you can't tell what their plan is, or any kind of idea what they're trying to do with this hiding that they're doing. And really, the tension should be in whether or not their plan is going to work, but we have no idea where they are in relation to him because the editing is so poor. We don't even realize whether or not they're in the same room as him, and that really takes away from the tension because our mind is trying to put together the pieces, and we can't keep up because there's no through line. The editing doesn't create a situation of spatial relation between the characters. And so you're kind of left lost waiting for something to happen. And then when it does happen, it's not all that interesting. And then it leads right into the ending, which is really dumb. It's a really dumb ending. It's just something happens. He says, guy says a line that's, like one of those action movie lines, and then ending, and then, loud rap song. And we're done.
Loud rap song. Yeah, I mean, it's successful. $8 million budget, made 11. I mean, the audience that it has will not be listening to the show, so I'm not worried about offending anyone, but it is weird. You know, we talk about movies like Triple Frontier and, even the movie we're going to get to later on, Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, movies I would have gone to the theater to see, and they came to Netflix, but something like this, I mean, maybe it's the fact that I wouldn't watch it on Netflix either, so...
Yeah.
And it may get lost in the shuffle stream, and that maybe that's why it has an appeal while on week two of Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, you make a movie for that little amount of money and that little amount of marketing layout. I don't think they paid all that much for marketing on that movie. I mean, it makes sense to put this out theatrically, I guess, even though it's such a terrible movie. It doesn't really do anything for them in terms of the creativity, but you make a movie at a particular price point, it's not as hard to make money back on it. I mean, Traffic probably did the same thing. And Traffic is real, true garbage.
Let's move on then to Long Shot, the Seth Rogen, Charlize Theron.
Yeah, Long Shot. This is a really fun movie. I really like this one a lot. Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen. Charlize Theron is the Secretary of State. She's about to run for president. And Seth Rogen is somebody she knew as a kid. They went to school together. He was a little bit younger than her. She was actually his babysitter. They hook up again after he quit his job. Sort of, kind of. He's fired, quit his job as a journalist and for a really, really left-wing paper that gets bought out by a right-wing magnate, kind of like a Andy Serkis playing one of the Koch brothers, both Koch brothers rolled into one. So they meet up at a party, they reconnect, and she likes his humor, and one of her weaknesses is that she's not funny. So she brings him on as a speechwriter, and the two begin to develop this very unique relationship that is really very unexpected, because the movie plays it a little too hard with how unattractive Seth Rogen is, especially compared to Charlize Theron, but I get it, and it worked for me. I bought the chemistry between these two very much. Part of it is because she's a great actress, and the other part is because he's incredibly charming. He really is incredibly charming, Seth Rogen. I really enjoy just his vibe and his persona, the way he speaks. Some of his humor doesn't really fit this character. Like, you see samples of his sort of journalism, and he's got, like, four-letter words in the title, which would probably never happen. And I'm guessing that wouldn't happen, like, even in the Village Voice. Probably not going to say fuck. Just guessing. They're there anyway. And that does get a laugh, but at the same time, it does detract from the reality of it a little bit. But his way of speaking, his manner, is still charming. And it's very Seth Rogen. You know, he's not stretching. There isn't really much beyond the Seth Rogen-ness of this character. So Charlize is doing a lot of the heavy lifting, but she's, you know, an incredible actress. And she sells all this. And she sells the chemistry between the two of them. She sells that this woman would be attracted to this man and would be in these situations. And really, that's really the key to the movie for me, is that she makes it... She makes you buy in that his charm would be enough for this relationship to work, and I really appreciate that. The movie's over long. It's 2 hours and 21 minutes, which this movie can't really sustain 2 hours and 20 minutes. This movie needed to be under 2 hours, really. Pushing it to 221 really does drag it out. There are a couple scenes you could probably cut out of this movie and make it tighter and maybe a little bit more enjoyable, but the laughs are so big that in the end, I didn't mind the length all that much, even though I was kind of checking my watch toward the end. But this is a really fun movie, and it's a really funny movie, and it's a good romance.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite actresses right now. I mean, I wasn't a big Atomic Blonde fan, but because of her, I was excited to see it when it came out. Obviously, Mad Max, she was great. She's just been pretty solid a lot lately. And then even the press tour they've gone on, I mean, she's doing a good job of selling them being attracted to each other on that. So it really does... I don't know. The whole thing has just been a pretty cool... just a total package, other than maybe the length.
I gotta say, if you want to enjoy Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, check out How Did This Get Made and their episode on it's Hello, Mary Lou... Prom Night 2. Yeah, Prom Night 2, Hello, Mary Lou. They do a great job. And Charlize Theron is just, wow. You just don't even expect her to be that funny. And she is super funny on that show.
Yeah, there's a YouTube channel I watch called Hot Ones, where
people eat hot wings.
And they've both been on it before. And then they did one together for this movie. But when she was on it the first time, she no-sold the hot wings. The very last one, she's like, oh, this is actually pretty good. I mean, it was just kind of like she looked like the biggest badass of everybody. Her and Natalie Portman, oddly enough.
Yeah.
You get all these guys. Most of the guys can't even finish it. It's pretty insane. But she was fun to watch on that. And then the one she did with Seth Rogen was a lot of fun. I've just enjoyed the entire... These two together, the chemistry, the interviews, everything they do has just been a lot of fun so far. So beyond the movie, it's been fun for me watching them together. Jonathan Levine's the director.
There's not much in his oeuvre that really would indicate anything great. And certainly I think he's probably the biggest issue with the movie, just because he needs a little bit more seasoning. He needs a better editor. He needs somebody to rein him in a little bit. Yeah, and certainly Seth is not the guy to rein anybody in. He loves to riff.
Right. I mean, you look at an Apatow movie, though, as good as they are, they tend to run long, too. They're not very tight. They just happen to be entertaining the entire time, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if I look at all the movies I've seen of his, even the ones I like 50-50, still probably could have cut a little out of that and tightened it up a little bit. Snatch, you definitely needed it.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. I'm glad that they're having success, and it's a perfect time to release it. You know, after Avengers Endgame.
Maybe. I mean, it kind of tanked.
Is $10 million bad for this?
It's a $40 million budget. They're kind of concerned. Oh,
and they spent a lot of money on advertising,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so they're kind of concerned. They did not want to finish behind Intruder. And so it doesn't look good.
Yeah, and they had more. They had 1,000 more.
Yeah, they were having a lot more screens, yeah. Which is unfortunate. This is a really good movie. People need to see this movie. It deserves better.
I do think it'll pick up a stream or pick up a new life on streaming, though, with these two.
I mean, Rotten Tomatoes, I mean, critics loved it. You know, it's like 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, so I was really surprised it didn't do better. But I mean, I think maybe releasing anything against Endgame in the second week was probably going to be a rough go. I mean, Endgame still sold out this weekend. It's already the number two movie of all time.
I know. It's insane.
To the point where Avatar fans are now coming out of the woodwork. Have you noticed this? Like, you're actually starting to see Avatar fans go, yeah, well, this is original product, and that's not. That's Disney stuff. So, see, it's all James Cameron getting all the money as opposed to Disney getting all the money. So this is original.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but is there not a huge Avatar ride at Disney now?
No, Bob, it's original. This is all Cameron stuff. That's what makes it better. It's not that MCU stuff.
The Iraq War was the original Avatar. It's not fair. You did see Ugly Dolls. Is there not a whole lot to mention about that one?
Not really. Kelly Clarkson, Blake Shelton, some songs, a nice message about everybody can make it in the world. Ugly or not.
All right, I've heard enough.
I have a radical idea. We'll cross the streams.
Excuse me, Egon. You said crossing the streams was bad.
Cross the streams.
You're going to endanger us. You're going to endanger our client.
Not necessarily. There's definitely a very slim chance we'll survive.
Extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile.
This is Zac Efron as Ted Bundy. Which was an interesting casting choice for sure. A lot of people thought that maybe he can't act, and I think in the past he's actually proven he can.
Yeah.
I think he's shown that multiple times. Really, he's gotten better and better each time I've seen him. I mean, Baywatch was a step backwards, and Bad Grandpa was a kind of a mistake. But other than that, he's pretty good.
But the movies were mistakes. I mean, he played his part in those movies fine. Yeah. But, yeah.
He was great in both Neighbors movies. So.
Right. I mean, he held his own with Seth Rogen, and, I mean, he looked phenomenal in Baywatch, and, I mean, he did as good as The Rock did. And Dirty Grandpa. More director issue, I thought, but what'd you think?
This is really good. You know, Joe Berlinger, when he wants to be, he can be really on, and he's really on in this one. This is a very interesting movie, and what's interesting, really, is that it doesn't have any gore. There's no lingering shots up until right at the end. They keep everything close to the vest. And that ending has a punch to it. And Lily Collins really sells that extraordinarily well. But we go back to 1969 when Ted Bundy met a woman who almost became his wife. She actually turns out to be the person who helps him get caught. Basically, he's kind of starts. It's weird how it starts because we don't even really realize he's a killer early on. I mean, obviously we do,
well,
but
right.
She doesn't. He doesn't even really get started actually with the killings that we're aware of until about 1974, and that's about 5 years into this relationship with this woman who has a daughter, and they seemingly have this perfect life going. Then he starts going to law school, and he goes to Utah to go to law school, and that's where, you know, suddenly there were murders back where he was, and now there are murders in Utah, and suddenly he becomes the prime suspect. And this really picks up with that right away, because right away he's in jail in this movie. He goes to jail pretty quickly, and then he's in court. He's in court for abduction charges, and then Colorado, and then escaping, which he escaped twice from prison, which I thought was really well depicted in these two movies, how he did that and what he was doing during that time. I thought it was really interesting. And then when you get to Florida, the movie really gets this extra kick to it, and there's a really powerful stuff. Really lots of great details. I love the courtroom stuff. I thought Jim Parsons was great.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that because I keep calling him Sheldon, you know, from Big Bang Theory. But he really steps out of that in this one. It really shows a lot of range and a lot of wit. And then John Malkovich shows up, and John Malkovich is awesome. And he gets the role of the judge who actually has this line in the movie, and you see at the end, Berlinger was really journalistic in trying to recreate the most well-known moments of Ten Buddy, to the point where he's like actual dialogue and staging even.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Malkovich and Sheldon and John Parsons, and I mean, yeah, James Hetfield was one arrested.
And he's really good, though. All that of them was are a real, good scene.
All of it was really good, but you do have that initial distraction, but that it does fade.
I didn't recognize Hetfield right away, though. I mean, I know you probably did. I didn't.
Well, I also knew he was in it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, just when they all popped up on screen, there was that initial, like, okay, I'm fighting through this. But you're right, all the performances were great. To the point where, you know, now it's just another actor playing the role, and you're not watching all this. The guy from The Big Bang Theory, or there's the dude from Rounders,
or Haley Joel Osment, kid from Sixth Sense.
Yeah, and it was just—I was shocked at how much I liked it. And it was—it's one of those where people don't want this movie made because how can you? You know, why do you gotta relive these gruesome murders and whatnot? And I guess I get that. I don't take that side. That's just kind of...
I would understand that argument if it was lingering on the blood and guts and actually, you know, him committing the murders, but it's not lingering on those things.
But, and, I mean, even making people relive it by having to have this be back in the... You know, he did the documentary as well. It was on Netflix last year, earlier this year, or something like that. Joe Berlinger did. And so I get that argument, I suppose, but that aside, that has nothing to do with the movie itself. And I was just kind of shocked at how, I mean, you never really see him do anything. We all know he's Ted Bundy, so we know he did it. But they do, you know, he raises that enough doubt where you sit there and you just start watching the movie for what it is, and you're not remembering the news articles and the reports and the footage from way back when. You're just watching it almost like it's happening for the first time. And I think that's pretty impressive when you have, you know, a character of this magnitude, of a guy that's almost a household name in terms of serial killers, to pull that off and to make it interesting and in good taste at the same time is quite a feat, in my opinion. So I highly recommend seeing Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile. I mean, back to your long... Or go ahead.
I think part of what the problem that some people have with this movie is that he is extraordinarily fair to what Bundy was saying, to the point where, you know, it almost is almost coincidental that there were murders where he lived and then there were murders in Utah, and we never saw him in Colorado, so we don't know when that happened, at what point that took place.
Right.
The murders in Florida, there's a point where one of the police officers actually said, well, we don't have any fingerprints at the scene. And it comes down to this really, I mean, it's one piece of evidence that is powerful, but at the same time, like, that's tough. That was the one thing, this bite mark on a woman's backside, that was the one thing. Like, oof, that is rough.
Yeah, especially to
in this day and age, man, people would have a hard time with that. You know, if you were more exposed to it.
Right. But, and so what they do is they make him, you know, they show the human side of a serial killer, which I guess, can annoy some people. But when you find out, you know, that he really did do it and he admits to it, it makes all that much scarier. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. if he's a monster the whole time, he's just a monster. When right. you're both, that just means you never know the person, you know. It really kind of terrifies you about what humans are capable of. And I thought they nailed that final scene.
Oh, yeah. That final scene is powerful. I kind of wonder if maybe people are upset that he didn't portray the blood and guts and actually showing Bundy committing the murders, because, you know, it could create doubt in people's minds in some way. And allowing him to be, you know, Zac Efron and be charming in some ways, and not that I think Zac Efron intentionally made this guy charming. He just sort of played what he saw.
And well, that was the big thing. He was a charming guy. He did have that charisma. Because they show you all the clips at the end that they basically did shot for shot in the movie.
So but, I was reading along on Wikipedia as I watched it, trying to make sure, you know, trying to see how accurate it was. And one thing that they don't talk about are the heads. How he, you know, I mean, it talks about it at the end, but like right. him taking the heads and keeping them at this apartment that he was keeping in Utah, that's a pretty big detail.
Right. But a lot of it is so much through his almost wife's point of view. You know, it's not completely that way, but
right.
you really are. I think it's based on her book and
portraying her perspective, because she never saw any of that.
Right.
I mean, to her point, and to the point of, I guess, that what would be her book, is that she never saw any of that until that final moment.
Right.
That is a hell of a moment. I mean, they really do nail that with the envelope she gets from the cop and holding onto it and not being unwilling to look at it and then showing up with it. And yeah, that is a hell of a moment. And Lily Collins really fucking nails it.
Yeah. And Zac Efron does too in that scene where they're talking to each other. I mean, I'm glad they didn't reduce it to a Jason or Freddy type thing, which I think you could. It's so easy to do that with serial killers. But no, I mean, I've always been a Joe Berlinger fan, usually better documentarian, I guess, than filmmaker, but still, he knocked this one out of the park. You could tell this is a passion project, because he did do a documentary on this, and he's really spent a lot of time with it. But I recommend watching it. It is just extremely well done. And it's on Netflix now. And
yeah, I had no idea.
And the only reason I knew is because my wife wants to watch Dead to Me, or Dead, I don't know what it is, the Christine Applegate, yeah. Linda Cardellini show. Very good. And then watching that, this popped up, like, I've been wanting to see that. How is that here already? So I text Sean, and Sean's like, really? That's out?
I thought it was going to be a theatrical release, honestly. I had no idea that they bought it.
And I'm glad he watched it, because me trying to describe this movie on my own would have been a disaster. But yeah, it's on Netflix now. I really recommend seeing it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed classic.
The Candidate.
Yes, The Candidate with Robert Redford playing a guy who he comes from a political family. He's really handsome. You know, 1970s, Robert Redford was one of the most handsome men in the world. And he's not a politician when we meet him, but we've got a character played by Peter Boyle, who is a political operative who shows up and wants him to run for Senate against this conservative Orange County Republican. And he thinks that, you know, hey, what do we got to lose? You're going to lose anyway, so just go out there and be the liberal that you are and talk about your liberal projects. And the movie proceeds from there with him deciding to run and making speeches, reaching out to people, you know, failing, succeeding, that kind of thing throughout. And really what I came away with is that this isn't a very good movie. I was really just kind of waiting for something to kick in, waiting for something to happen in this movie, waiting for it to make a fucking point, and it just never does. I wanted there to be some kind of turn at some point, like maybe he's so disaffected and he becomes a man of the people and they embrace him. No, that never really happens. All right, well, maybe he decides at some point, well, okay, I actually do want to win, so maybe I'll just continue to try and be more centrist, and you'll see politics begin to corrupt me. No, that doesn't really happen either. So what the hell was the point of this movie? What were they going for? What was the thing that they were trying to communicate with this movie? Because I have absolutely no idea. Now, this is what really irritates me about a movie like this is that a filmmaker makes a movie like this specifically this way for the audience to then project themselves upon it. So really, Republicans and Democrats can watch this and come away with different things and both feel like they've commented on the same movie. So Republicans can look at this and go, see, look at that empty suit, that good-looking empty suit there. Yeah, that's exactly what liberalism is. It's just this empty image. And then Democrats can look at it the other side and go, oh, look at him lampooning. See what he did there? He's lampooning the right there with that point. And look at the speech that he gave. Yeah, I see it. So anybody can write a think piece about this movie and be right, because the movie has no perspective of its own. It has no spine. And that's really what I came away with from this, is that this is a spineless movie.
Yeah, it's hard to say what the point is. I think the whole point of everything was literally the last line, what now? You know, and that... And I think that's their way of saying politics is going to corrupt him. But
how much of that are you projecting upon the movie?
Right. I'm more or less projecting on the filmmakers, thinking I think that's what they're going for. I don't really, you know, it's hard to... No,
This shapeless void of a film. There's nothing. They don't have any courage to their convictions. There's no courage in the way he speaks, and the way that they have him speak, and the way they portray him.
You sent me an article written by
Bella Abzug,
and she didn't really care for it either. She found it boring, but she said something along the lines of, this is about basically the people who like this are the people who have no hope. And in a way, I'm one of those people, I suppose. I'm not going to say I like this movie because it wasn't entertaining enough for me to like. But I'm one of those people who don't, you know, I see certain things. I mean, I lean left, but I see things that the left does. I'm just like, let that one go and just get them next time. And maybe I'm wrong in that, but that's kind of my approach to things. So in a lot of ways, I lack hope. But even then, I still didn't find this movie to be that entertaining. But if you want to talk more about the article.
I mean, just he was talking about a number of different aspects of this character that are lacking, and this portrayal that is lacking, and the reality that it lacks. Like, he never worries about money for a second. There's no discussion. Maybe one scene comes up where it's him raising money, and we don't even see it. It happens right off screen. And I thought that was a very, very interesting point about the way this movie lacks detail and lacks true care with this character. I mean, Robert Redford is one of the most passionate liberals on the planet. And you've got him giving speeches that sound kind of like Robert Redford would sound as a politician, but there's an emptiness. The way that the camera is pulled back from him, the way the filmmakers take no perspective, whether they're not judging him, they're not judging his opponent, they're just kind of like leaving this void because they want you to project yourself into this. And there's nothing that approach can work, but it doesn't work here.
Right. I was gonna say I'd almost prefer that, but you're right. It doesn't really work here. Maybe it did at the time. It seemed to get decent reviews.
Well, that's the thing. That's the other aspect of this. When I talk about the lack of courage, you're talking about a movie that was made the year that Nixon's running for re-election. And for Hollywood people to release a movie in that era with this lack of conviction and this unwillingness to take on this guy who was doing such horrible things in the world. You know, he's furthering Vietnam. And granted, we didn't really know he was a criminal at the time, but we knew that, I mean, everybody knew that he just didn't seem like a good guy based off of Vietnam and other aspects. So to not have a willingness to take that on in any way, to not have any aspect of that, to pretend that there was, that I guess this character exists in a Nixon-free universe at that time, again, it just portrays the filmmakers as spineless.
I mean, a movie I much prefer, which, and it's not necessarily a great movie, I just find it entertaining, as a Distinguished Gentleman with Eddie Murphy. I just, you know, he gets elected because he has the same name as the guy who's already a politician, so he doesn't have to really raise money. I mean, obviously none of this, it's like a perfect world kind of a movie, but at least it was entertaining, you know, you have Eddie Murphy and the jokes and all that, and this just was kind of dragged and bored me.
And another one I would say is Primary Colors, which you can say what you want about Primary Colors being what it is. I find it's charming. It's a movie that has a lot of personality. And Travolta is very animated. Kathy Bates is really animated. Emma Thompson is really animated. You know, everybody's kind of, there's a lot of energy behind that movie. And there's no energy in this movie. This is just a lackadaisical film that doesn't really have any perspective, point of view, and really, as just to take all the politics out of it, it's just not very entertaining.
Right.
Even Redford, you know, is a magnetic dude, but he's not really given much an opportunity to be charming or energetic.
Yeah, and then, I mean, if you want to go the No Hope route, there's Wag the Dog. I mean, they got that movie out there. That's entertaining and extremely well done. I kind of wanted to like it, so I was bummed that it wasn't as fun as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Had you seen it before? Is this the
no,
first time?
Actually, I thought I'd had it, but no, I didn't recognize it at all once I saw it. And what a waste of Peter Boyle. He just sort of pops up and disappears and pops back in and then is gone again. And you think maybe the movie's going to be about him for a time. And then he's just gone all of a sudden. Like a lot of scenes, he's just in the background and he never really gains any kind of, like, you want him to either be the evil, you know, politician, the evil background guy who's going to push him towards, you know, compromising his ideals. And, oh, there's an interesting story. Like, this guy's helping him to compromise his ideals to get this thing that he wants. Or he's going to be the guy who kind of begins to maybe come around and invest in this guy and then find that he's empty and have that kind of moment where, he doesn't really mean any of this. Like, something like that. You know, a real story. But there's no story.
No. And there's that scene in the debate where he kind of goes off script, and it works for him. But I don't know. They just don't do enough with it.
It doesn't even. I mean, they didn't set it up well. No. They didn't set it up well as like a turn of any kind. And really, what did he say that was controversial there? Because they hadn't talked about race and they hadn't talked about poverty. I mean, those are issues that people care about and want to know about. And he just sort of blurts it out at the end after having spent most of the debate, you know, saying what his people wanted him to say. But then they hadn't set it up before that he was compromising himself. Right. And there was no scene before that where he kind of comes to a realization and like, all right, well, I'm going to compromise myself and just do what you guys want. And then suddenly go off the script when he gets in there.
I mean, it was almost an eye rolling moment. Not that, you know, race and homelessness are, you know, I hate to call those eye rolling topics, but and for Hollywood it is, you know, it's just kind of like, well, yeah, but the way you're doing this is just very pat yourself on the back, but even then you're still not taking a stand, so what do you do? I don't know. Yeah, so go ahead and skip the candidate.
It's a pretty big disappointment. I'll have a full written review posted on the Facebook page this week, so
if you disagree with us, so I'd love to hear what you have to say. Yeah. Sometimes it's fun if Sean and I are on different pages. This time we're not. So
next year, just be ready for like 15 different think pieces about what the candidate is, because every four years, somebody pulls this movie out and goes, "Aha! See, look what I found in the candidate." When really you should be watching The Face in the Crowd,
right? Which they pulled that one out last time, right?
They needed to pull it out more, apparently.
They didn't pull it out far enough.
That's the Andy Griffith movie we did as a classic a while back, if anybody forgot.
That was a hell of a movie.
That was pretty great. Lonesome Roads.
Since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
What, dear?
Grace! She passed away 30 years ago.
All right, we have three movies that came out this week in 1989. Do you know what they are offhand?
I know one of them. Two of them. I know two of them.
Signs of Life. Do you know that one?
No, that one I don't know.
Do I have that in front of me? This is where we're going to really miss Josh. Bo Bridges, Vincent D'Onofrio.
No, I guess I didn't look for that one.
Directed by John David Coles. Does that sound like a name? Yeah, I don't know much about that movie. I do like Bo Bridges, though. Made $100,000 at the theater. Lost Angels?
Lost Angels is Adam Horowitz from the Beastie Boys, making his feature film debut as a troubled kid who is moving in with his mother after, I guess, leaving his father, moving to Los Angeles, and he's going to be put into a drug rehab there against his will, and he's a lost angel.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. Is it any good?
It's on YouTube. The quality was so bad I couldn't finish it. So I only got about 10 minutes in and kind of got the premise.
I mean, as I get older, I get more fascinated with the Beastie Boys, but I don't know if that's enough to like this movie or not.
It's not available anywhere other than this really bad YouTube transfer. So I don't know how easy it'll be to see.
Jason Mollett did tell me I need to check those VHSs he sent us, because a lot of the movies we say we can't find are actually in my basement. Sitting in the, so maybe we'll have to start working ahead. And then Listen to Me.
Listen to Me is a weird, weird movie. This is Roy Scheider and Kirk Cameron and Jamie Gertz. In the story of a couple kids who are at college to go to become debaters. And debate at this particular college is bigger than football. So it's like a big deal that they're going to be on the debate team. There's a superstar debater who's on the team who his arc that is that he's arrogant, but that he's a really good debater and he wants to quit to become a writer, but he can't quit because he's too much needed for the debate team. Kirk Cameron is this young up-and-comer, so freshman. He's got a bizarre Southern accent for no good reason, just a really terrible Southern accent that really drove me insane trying to watch this movie. And Jamie Gertz is his love interest in the film and his rival. She's going to be his debate partner, and they're going to debate issues. And one of the things that they end up debating that becomes kind of the second and third act, really, is abortion. And it's debated in a very raw fashion, where they're talking for and against and talking about it in ways that are like movies don't talk about abortion like this. And the final thing is a debate over abortion, and you know, being that it is Kirk Cameron, it is him coming out against abortion, and actually turning the entire room around with him with his debate and his point. Which is interesting, at the least. I mean, I disagree, but I mean, it's very interesting that the argument that they make, and I just wish he hadn't made it as such a bad actor. It would be much more interesting from a much better actor who wasn't then burdened on top of being a not great actor, burdened with this bad Southern accent that he's got to carry throughout the entire movie. Weird movie. I didn't realize it's apparently R-rated because there's boobs right away. I mean, I thought this was going to be like an innocent Kirk Cameron teen comedy, and it's very serious, very self-serious, and also just boobs, just right there off the, like, wow, okay.
Kirk Cameron's not all bad. yeah, next week in 89, we got a lot more movies. Adam Sandler's debut in Going Overboard. Earth Girls Are Easy, one I've seen. A lot of great, not great necessarily, but famous people. Jeff Goldblum.
Right, Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis, Jim Carrey, Damon Wayans.
Yeah, that's a fun little interesting
movie. Julie Brown might be in that one. Is Julie Brown in that? I don't know.
Yeah, The Return of the Swamp Thing.
I can't wait. I'm dying to see that movie. Great title. Where was the Swamp Thing? What's he doing? What's he returning from?
And then See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor?
Yeah.
That was a really bad one, I believe. But I think Kevin Spacey's in that. I think that might be a debut for Kevin Spacey.
Really? Wow. That'll make it fun. next week in the theater, we got The Hustle, Pokemon Detective Pikachu, and Pond.
Oh, wow.
I believe it is. Unless I made
Detective Pikachu is next week? I had no idea. The Hustle is Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson with a take on Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which is a movie I guess we're going to get to at some point. Did we already? I don't remember. Is that coming up, or is that one that's already in the past? I can't remember now. It's Steve Martin and Michael Caine in that one. But that movie's based off of another movie that was a few years back, or way back, with Marlon Brando and David Niven, called Bedtime Story.
Bedtime Stories for Grown-Ups. So I had a hard time finding it on IMDb without putting all that in there, because there's a lot of movies called Bedtime Stories. I'm looking forward to that. I always liked Brando, although I'll be honest, the older I get, the more I kind of like, he's kind of a turd. I don't know. I mean, Last Tango in Paris kind of
pulled me the wrong way. Wasn't it?
And then, you know, when you hear afterwards some of the stories, and I don't want to get all political and stuff, but he's not naked in it and she's naked the whole time. Kind of weird.
Yeah, it was weird and creepy. Then you get all of his on-set stuff, you know, like what he did to Frank Oz and the score. Have you heard that story?
No.
So basically, they're making the score, and anytime Brando didn't want to do something, he would show up on set with no pants. Just show up in his underwear, and he's like, "You're gonna have to shoot me. You're gonna have to shoot up at me, because you're not gonna be able to come not putting pants on."
Jeez.
What he did he basically wanted Coppola basically wanted to kill himself because of Brando on. On Apocalypse Now. You know, like, shows up fat and he shows up like, I think my entire role should be shot in the dark. Marlon, we kind of need to see you. No, I think you should just shoot me in the dark.
But this is earlier Brando. So I'm,
yeah, this is very still, early, like 1954, I believe.
So we'll get to see him, you know, in his peak, his prime. So that should be fun.
Weird to think of Brando in a role that Steve Martin would go on to play, and then Rebel Wilson.
Yeah.
David Niven, Michael Caine to Anne Hathaway seems kind of believable.
Well, yeah, and she's had it's two movies already this year for her. I'm sure she's forgotten one of them. Interesting. So that is our show. Next week, I mentioned all those shows, so I'm not going to mention them again. I do want to thank our Patreon supporters for helping support the podcast. If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon to get yourself a credit on the show. And again, the bonus episode is going to go out. You may need to reset your feed for Patreon if you need help. Contact me on Facebook, and I'll help you get your feet up and running. We'll start with our key grip level, Charlie Messing, and the Hall of Famer, Jason Bryant. Our character actors, Christina Cato, Josh and Beth Paul, and Cousin Jeff.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
I think I may have got someone to buy something from his TeePublic site.
Nice.
I'm hoping. Our next special effects level, Corey from IVMB, also has a Golden Girls podcast. And since Jeff has a lot of Golden Girls stuff on there, I got him looking at his site to pick up some stuff. But we do have Corey from IVMB at the special effects level, along with Sarah Morrell.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer is Jason Mollett.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars Uncle Jeff and Dave Sievers.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Again, if you want a credit on the show, ihatecritics.net/Patreon, or click on the PayPal link. There is the podcast merch. We also have a TeePublic page. We got 3 shirts out there. I have a couple ideas I'm kicking around in my head. Once they have time to work on them, or Sean has ideas, we'll sit down and try to make some more shirts for the show. Just potato chips is in my mind, and that feel like that needs to be a shirt.
Potato chips and like hand cream or something.
or like some green soda.
Crumpled up little.
I was going to leave it more ambiguous, but if you want to. Potato chips and Kleenex.
If you didn't listen to this show, that sounds perfectly natural.
It does. But yeah, things to look forward to.
We miss you, Josh.
But with that, that is the show, and we'll move on to, I can't really play our ending anymore, because I forgot to cut out the three best friends part. Two of us. So let's just jump into Flickchart. I do have our co-host, George Washington, ready to go. And we will start with Zombieland versus Ice Age 2 The Meltdown.
Zombieland. Fuck that squirrel.
Dead Poets Society, what about Bob?
Dead Poets Society.
I agree. Night of the Living Dead, 1968. Jumanji, 95.
Night of the Living Dead.
I agree. Coin doesn't have much work. Notes on a Scandal, The Chronicles of Riddick.
Chronicles of Riddick.
I'll go with you on that one. I don't have passion one way or the other. One way or the other. The Professional or The Fantastic Mr. Fox?
The Professional, kind of, even though I don't like either of those movies.
I do kind of like The Professional, so I'll go with that one. Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, or The Swingers?
Swingers.
I mean, it's funny even when he's not here. Because it wouldn't have changed.
Hey, that's true. That's true.
Oh, this will be fun. Match Point or Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
Match Point.
I love Match Point.
That's a great movie, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's...
I know we're not allowed to like Woody Allen anymore, but...
I just try not to... I don't know. He's still working, so they haven't totally shut him down yet, so... But, man, that's Scarlett Johansson, really. That's where I became a fan of hers.
Yeah.
And we'll watch. I mean, she's a big reason I go to the event. Not just because she's hot, but I just enjoy her on screen. I think she's just a hell of an actress. That's a hell of a movie. Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, or 28 Days Later?
28 Days Later.
I agree. Zodiac or Point Break 91?
Zodiac.
Yeah, that was on Netflix. I hope it still is. I started watching that a while ago, but it's long.
It is long.
I'm going to reset Madagascar versus Duck Dodgers. Cartoons. John Wick, Chapter 2, or Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. I haven't seen John Wick, so I'll just let you pick.
All right.
I mean, I don't know. Rocky 4 versus The Da Vinci Code.
It's Rocky 4. You and I do agree too much. It's weird.
We have our... areas, but it's pretty specific.
Yeah.
So it's hard for to pop a wine flick chart. The Great Escape, Star Trek Nemesis. I have no passion for either one of these.
I don't either. Great Escape.
Yeah. Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, The Day the Earth Stood Still, 2008.
Phantom Menace.
I'll go with you. I'm not meaning to make this boring. A League of Their Own, The English Patient.
League of Their Own.
Yep.
English Patient sucks.
The Fox and the Hound or Three Kings?
Three Kings.
The Legend of Zorro Park. Come on.
I had this whole bit with a coin. Come on, flick chart.
Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Closer.
Closer.
Yeah.
Closer is a really good movie. Not just because Natalie Portman plays a stripper.
Oh, no, I agree. Even though, I mean, what you said was funny. I'm just... That is a hell of a movie. Elektra, Superman 78.
Ugh, those both suck. Superman 78.
Yeah. Pretty Woman, Idiocracy.
Idiocracy. Fuck Pretty Woman. Hate that movie.
25th Hour... Star Trek Generations.
25th Hour by a landslide.
Poor Josh isn't here to participate. Not that he. This would be fun for him. Manhunter, 1986, or It's Complicated.
Where would he go on that? That would really be really painful for him.
I think he would fish with Gandhi, but
probably.
But I mean, for me, it's Manhunter by a landslide.
Yeah, it's Manhunter. There's no doubt.
Here, we'll flip a coin on this one, even though I'll just disagree for fun. Terminator 2, Judgment Day, or Tombstone?
Terminator 2.
I will go Tombstone. Just I do lean probably a little more towards that, even though I know Terminator 2 is probably the...
What do you say, George?
Heads for Terminator, tails for Tombstone. It is heads. Terminator 2 wins.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Josh.
Well done, George.
Summer of 84, movie we just saw last year, or American Psycho.
I'm glad you said that because I couldn't actually remember what that movie was. It's American Psycho.
Yeah. Valkyrie or iRobot?
Valkyrie.
Yeah.
I mean, I like iRobot, I guess, but I like Valkyrie. I don't know. I like them both, but I don't care.
Well, let's see what George thinks.
Yeah.
George likes iRobot.
All right, then. Screw you, George.
The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, Twilight.
Hunger Games.
I agree. Airplane, City of... I don't know what the City of the Living Dead is, 1980.
I've not seen City of the Living Dead.
Let's see if we can throw Airplane up against Phenomenon, John Travolta.
It's Airplane.
Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, 101 Dalmatians, live action, 96.
Oh, God, yeah, that's Monty Python. Live action, 101 Dalmatians is brutal.
Just pointless.
Yeah.
Evolution or The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan?
Evolution. That's one of those movies I'm almost ashamed how much I like and watch that movie. It's like, I wreck it right next to your Who's the Man thing. Like,
really?
I watch Evolution a lot. And just David Duchovny's butt is just makes me laugh every time. He does this bit where he just moons everybody just for no good reason, and it just kills me every time.
There's nothing funnier than a good moon. This one should be closer, but it's not. Or maybe it shouldn't be. The Sound of Music, Casablanca.
Ooh, that is close for me, actually. Sound of Music was a great experience for me. It's Casablanca because it's like my second favorite movie of all time.
Right.
But I love The Sound of Music now.
The King of Comedy, or I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Ugh, that is brutal. I guess I'll go King of Comedy, but King of Comedy is not a great movie.
I wouldn't say it's great, but I think it's good. When the other one, I already forgot what it was. I know what you did last summer. Ray, Land Before Time.
Ray. Yeah, Ray was a really good movie.
All right, last one. Schindler's List, Freddy vs. Jason.
What do you think, George?
Schindler's List.